they were hit or miss. There were some really great songs. And then there are like some songs that sound like a cartoon skeleton playing a ribcage xylophone. It's like...
You know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Tell them about punk!
What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And this is the show where, using a number generator and the Rate Your Music Punk charts, we choose one album and one EP at random to discuss. This week, we are joined by not one, but two guests. So why don't you two say who you are and where you're from?
Hello, I'm Katrina. I play in Expert Timing. I play bass and sing. And I'm in sunny Orlando, Florida right now. Well, not so sunny, as we prep for a hurricane.
And I'm Jeff. I'm also from Orlando and from Expert Timing and also in Orlando.
Also preparing for a hurricane.
Well, less than Katrina.
True. Right.
This will be only the second time we've had four people on at the same time, so hopefully we don't stumble over each other too much. Last time we did it, we were all in the same room, so this will be a little different. I saw Expert Timing for the first time last year at Fest, and I made a point of going through like all the bands that played Fest last year and like at least sampling like a little bit of their stuff if I could. And your album, Glare?
Yeah, that's our
right.
First bullet.
Yeah, that one jumped out at me before Fest, and I was like, oh, cool, I need to make sure I go see them. And luckily, it worked out schedule-wise where I could go see y'all play, and y'all were so good. Like, one of the most fun acts, at least that day, maybe even that weekend, but you guys were great.
Awesome, thanks. It was really fun. It's always, like, so nerve-wracking just because, you know, Fest is really fun, and you don't want to just mess up. Awful, but and our record had just come out the week before,
that week.
So yeah, it was really cool to be able to play some of these songs for the first time in front of a bunch of people, and it was really fun.
Yeah, and I saw like the Fest put up one of those highlight videos for this year, getting ready for this year's Fest.
Yeah,
and I think your drummer is like front and center of that video.
Yeah, people always tell us they love watching Capron because he is really like. I don't know. He has a ton of fun playing drums, and you can see it, and it's great. I'm really glad that he made it into the Fest reel.
Yeah, I love how y'all like have him like dead center too on stage. It was like because you know most of the time the drummer's just in the back, but like he was like right up front and like the
part. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That rocky stage. We didn't want to use the house kit, so we just ended up in a row.
It was pretty fun. Right.
Yeah, it was a really memorable set, and that was definitely. The right call.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, and of course, y'all are playing again this year, too.
Yeah, we're playing two sets, because we're doing a Friday full band, and then we're going to do an acoustic set on Sunday.
Yeah, so I'm hoping I'll get a chance to see y'all play again. You know, Fest is always crazy with schedules and all that, but...
For sure.
Understood.
But I don't think I've even really looked too closely at the schedule. Because at this point, it changes a lot, so it's almost not even worth it, like, setting your schedule aside, at least until the app is ready.
Yeah.
Gotta get the app. That's really...
Yeah. So as long as you're not playing against Jawbreaker, I'll probably see y'all play.
All right.
Yeah, we're playing like, late Friday night, so no. Jawbreaker is playing late Sunday night, I think. So
I guess we'll get into the show. So, as usual, we like to take a look at the Rate Your Music charts for the year we've drawn, and this year it is 1983.
Let me go on, like I blister in the sun, let me go on.
Burning up the house!
Death of
I'm not drinking! Here's the dessert! Get what I'm drinking!
And so right off the bat, is there anything that immediately jumps out at everyone?
Let's see. Well, the Violent Femmes, okay. Is that the record with Blister in the Sun or no?
Yeah, it is. It's yeah, that's like the first track on that record too. That's also the one with Gone Daddy Gone on it as well. So yeah,
that's pretty cool. And New Order. That's
yeah, the Power Corruption and Lies record.
I know Keitana did a cover of one of the tracks on that record, which was pretty cool.
Which record is that by them? Is it? It's not the first one.
By New Order?
That's, yeah.
Yeah, that's the second album.
Okay, yeah, Movement was the first one. Yeah. Okay. This is like one of the big ones, though. Like, it's the best reviewed, best rated, most listened to one.
Yeah. Oh, and U2, that U2 album, I'm sure, is like a big one.
Yeah, it's War. What's on that record? That's one of the. Is that the first one they really blew up on?
I think Sunday Bloody Sunday might be on that one.
Yeah, and New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
October was the one before, but I don't know if that one was quite as big. Yeah, I don't recognize many of those songs. Number four, I think we've mentioned them last time we talked about 1983, is Wipers Over the Edge. It's constantly a battle to decide which Wipers record's the best, but it's either this one or their first record. Is this real?
Mm-hmm. Which record created Nirvana? Which one does Kurt
make? Would it be this one, Over the Edge? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not super familiar with... I know he was a Wipers fan, but...
Yeah.
Because they did...
Oh, there's a... Is it... Jesus Don't... Like... Is that a... The Jesus Don't Love Me for a Sunbeam. Was that a Wipers cover? Like, what? Goddamn.
No. They covered, I know Nirvana covered Return of the Rat, so that's from
the first, yeah, that's the first record.
So we had actually, they guessing. Covered D7 and Return of the Rat, so those are both from the first album. So.
Oh man, there's Replacements on here. Now, unpopular opinion, I don't really care that much about the Replacements. but a lot of people do, so there you go.
Yeah, they're a band that they've never really clicked for me, personally. Yeah.
Oh, that's not a great one either.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's their, like, really weird.
Yeah.
The cover, I don't even know what's happening. Like, it's actually called Hootenanny. Really interesting choice.
Yeah, it's like I almost want to say they were trying to do, like, some kind of lounge rock.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. A weird, like, 60s vibe on the front. I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that's right before Let It Be, so, like, you know, that's the huge Replacements record. Which, I mean, I've listened to that one, too, and that's fine. Yeah. Like, I get why people like it, it just doesn't personally do anything for me.
That's how I feel, where it's like, okay, it's fine.
Alex Chilton's song, really great song, but other than that...
Let's see, what else is on here? Bad Brains, Rock for Light. Is that the one that's mixed really weird, where it's like, sounds like chipmunks?
No idea, but now I want to listen to it.
There's a version.
I don't think so, but maybe I'm only hearing the like remastered version of it.
Oh, that's right. There is like a CD remaster that was like remastered at a... Maybe this record version. I don't remember. There is one of their records that's like mixed at the wrong speed, so it makes it sound really weird.
Wow.
I want to say it's that one, but I don't know. It's still highly rated, so the songs themselves are still good. There's Misfits, Earth AD, Wolf's Blood, which we may reference a little bit on our album once we get to that. But also before that, Minuteman's What Makes a Man Start Fires, which is the second Minuteman album. I want to say it's a full length technically, but it's probably like, what, 10 minutes long?
Right.
But
the punk record.
Yeah, like the longest song on that record is 2 minutes and 10 seconds. So
I love that. That's perfect. Oh, this Black Flag.
That's a compilation, right? Everything Went Black?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah. That's the one with, like, three different vocalists. And I think that's the one that they couldn't even... When they originally released it, they weren't even allowed to put their name on it because there was, like, some weird lawsuit going on with another record label, but they eventually won that, of course. X's More Fun in the New World, which is their fourth record? Yes.
Looks like a Nickelodeon record cover. Like Rocco's Modern Life or something. The aesthetic, I like it.
Yeah, 83. It's a weird little year because it seems like it's between hardcore and a little bit. There's not too much new wave here, despite it kind of being right there in the middle of it.
Yeah, I honestly expected there to be more. I'm pretty surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes Right Your Music is really weird. It doesn't actually include some new wave records when it does the punk charts, but then other times it will. I wonder what happens if I add new wave to it and to see which ones add into the list.
It'll suddenly be like all new wave.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how they relate and compare to the if it affects the rankings of the first page that much.
Look, Husker News 40s.
Yeah, we discussed that's the record we talked about. Yeah, Everything Falls Apart. Yeah, it's the first album, right? It's hardcore Husker Du, so it's, you know, a little different.
You know, I was listening to a little bit of, I heard a song from that, and I heard a song from that Minutemen record from the same year. And I, for some reason, those are two bands that I love. They're two bands that are super influential to me and just some of my favorites of all time. But I always put them in such different sonic spaces. But when you look at their first records, their real early stuff, they sound a lot more similar. And I don't know why I never really put those two together in that way.
Well, they were doing sort of atypical hardcore stuff. You know, they weren't doing the Black Flag, you know, Minor Threat thing. And then even their later career, there's a lot of similarities in, like, how they wrote songs. And I don't know, they got really experimental. There was always that competitiveness between them because Husker Du did Zen Arcade as a double album, and then Minor Threat did Double Nickels, and
I mean,
what did I say?
You said Minor Threat.
Oh yeah,
a Minor Threat double album.
Which I guess if you put the complete discography in a LP form, it would be a double album. But
hell yeah,
I added in New Wave. It finally populated on this page. The only big additions is Talking Heads, Speaking in Tongues was number 4 on there. That's a humongous record, actually. Which one? And I would consider that part. I don't know. Early Talking Heads definitely is considered sort of art punk, but I would personally consider this an extension of punk, even though it's much more melodic. But
yeah.
And the only other, I don't see too much more that really changes when you.
Yeah, it's not add really
new wave. Oingo Boingo. The Police. Yeah, not too much different. So it is a strange year.
R.E.M. fit into this? Like, R.E.M., is the first R.E.M. EP 83?
Well, the first album, Murmur, was 83, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how does that fit in?
Yeah, there's like, we run into this quite a bit. So, R.E.M., what were they classified at this time? I mean, I guess it's college rock.
College rock, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever vague, you know, term sort of that means.
New wave, sort of jangle pop, but I don't know that jangle pop was. I think that's more of a retroactive term. I don't know that some people were using that.
I don't think even alternative was a term yet.
No, definitely not.
That, I feel like that wasn't until like late 80s, maybe early 90s, before you started hearing that. They classify jangle pop and alternative rock with a sub-genre of post-punk. Yeah, Rate Your Music's really weird. Like, there's definitely a lot of stuff that falls under the punk umbrella, but the people, because it's user-based, the people who decide to tag genres on Rate Your Music tend to just disagree on what exactly punk is.
It's so hard, even when people ask us, like, what genre our band is. That's why we just started saying bubble grunge. We're just like, whatever.
Right, make something up. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was another band, like Lemonheads, I think was bubble grunge. Like, they had started that term or some, I don't know, around there. And I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
Really like them? Kind of fits what we are. Yeah.
I wanted to get your opinion on this. Since your band is pretty much right in that exact wheelhouse that I'm thinking of, it feels like punk in 2019 is essentially kind of dead. There's definitely hardcore bands, and there's definitely, like, the sort of, like, new wave post-punk inspired stuff, but as far as, like, more pop-based music, it feels like everything has gone in an indie direction.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely see what you're saying. I think it's really weird because you get, like, you have, like, punk rock that's, like, very produced now.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, the standard if it's, like, you know, like, a Blink-182 record sounds like, who knows what is you know, so it's like, but like punk from like 83 all sounds like they didn't have access to expensive equipment. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
had to record it on a budget. So, and they like a lot of this stuff sounds like they did it all live in one take, you know?
Or I don't know. Do you think some of that was choices though? Like, where we hear like garbage sounding cymbals, maybe that's what they wanted.
Yeah, no.
I think it's a mix of like limited time, limited studio time.
Yeah.
Maybe limited access to, you know,
yeah, but
engineers
guess...
who knew what they were doing. So they got stuck with the guy who's like, I'll record you late at night, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like on a cassette like recorder.
I mean, but there are like thinking about like the punk bands today, like there are some, but honestly, maybe some are more like during the Foreign Descent shows,
yeah,
like the bands that come over from Europe.
Yeah.
I feel a lot of those are like kind of that more classic punk sound. So maybe it's still kind of
that's more true.
Alive and well in those circles. I don't know.
I guess my thinking is a lot of bands that are, you see them more just listed as indie or almost just tagged as DIY artists in general. Like they've got the spirit of punk as far as like how you make music. You just like, you know, get together with your friends and record stuff and, you know, you just play what you want to play. And it seems like stuff that would have traditionally been called punk is now like no one wants to use that term to describe their bands that way, which I get under, you know, you take in multiple influences from various different genres. Yeah. But it feels like it's a lot of like indie, a little bit of like emo influence stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just interesting. There's no like clear cut thing of what punk is anymore, which is fine. You know, it's just, it makes it a little harder when we're doing this show because then we're like, what do we call punk now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's tricky. But even like when I think of emo, I think even emo is kind of a thing of sort of the past now. If I think of just bands that are straight up emo. I think moving away from that too, but I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know.
There's no genres.
This is, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is true. I look at stuff like that site, The Gray Estate, and like the type of albums and bands that they talk about over there. Like I consider them punk bands, but none of them really get labeled that.
Yeah.
And it's who I'm drawn to the most, you know.
Yeah.
Musically.
Yeah.
And you know, Like,
sorry. Punk spirit. It's like, you know?
Yeah. Plus, I think punk also has a little bit of some negative connotations right now, thanks to stuff like the Warped Tour and a lot of, you know, toxic, you know, bullshit in that area.
Maybe that's part of it. And so punk and emo maybe were, you know, rightfully growing a little bit in a new direction, and then there'll be kind of a new punk era, but it'll be more inclusive and better.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of like Fest is a good example of that kind of culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And DIY punk and indie circles and in general are moving in that direction. And it's definitely a drastic improvement.
Definitely.
So maybe we lose the term punk, but I don't know. We gain something better.
When you think of like punk as a mentality, it's like, or even the star of the music, it's calling out things in your culture and in the world that are, you know, messed up essentially. So I guess for us right now, that's some of the major issues that are happening. So it is kind of the new face of punk is calling out lack of diversity and, you know, racism, misogyny and all that garbage. So I guess that is still punk, just the new face of it, the new front.
Yeah, I mean, it's also very hard to tell, too, when you're in the moment. It'll be one of those things that in, like, 5 years, you'll be like, oh, that's what it was at the time. Yeah. But I guess we could go back to the chart, unless, let's see. Well, is there anything anyone wanted to call out specifically on here?
Let's see.
Oh, I don't know, like, Billy Bragg songs by name, but that's a good Billy Bragg record. Number 21 is Life's a Riot with Spy vs. Spy.
What is that? Life's a Riot with Spy vs. Spy. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
I have no clue. I'm not super up on my Billy Bragg knowledge, really.
Yeah, me neither. I just like Billy Bragg.
I like this Pylon Chomp just because I like the record cover and it's a big like T-Rex and it just says Chomp. I like that.
You know, it's funny when you get on the second page, it kind of falls off a cliff as far as like super well-known records, and it's interesting.
Yeah, I have no idea who a lot of these are.
Dylan, you normally put together a playlist. Did anything when you were putting a playlist together jump out at you for 83?
You mentioned REM earlier, and I wanted to go off of that and point out how weird it is in my mind. There's just this dissonance of REM existing at the same time as hardcore,
yeah, and the
same time as Huey Lewis. Like, I just feel like those are all such drastically different. They are, but yet at the same time, they kind of get, you know, maybe Huey Lewis is the exception, but I lump him in from maybe like a power pop perspective.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I think like I was born in 1983, so just like the idea of 1983 is kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
As a concept, like I just think of like early MTV, just because that's all I had, I guess, like Max Headroom and.
Yeah, like even back then, like, no one knew what punk really was. Like, you'd see new wave bands get called punk, even though it's like, you know, right. I wouldn't say Adam Ant is necessarily a punk band, but that's what people were calling, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, it's another thing. They were in the moment, so they didn't know exactly what to call anything. But, yeah, it's a strange list, because, like, I'm on, like, page 4 now, and I don't recognize any names anymore.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
I mean, there are only 10 pages of results for 83, but it's still, it's funny.
Like, how did you find out about these bands in 83? Like, how would you just, like, look at magazines and stuff? Or, like...
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
Ordering stuff off of a, like, a mailing list that came in a different record that you had? Or, like...
I don't know.
I bet you were entirely reliant on whatever record store you had in your area.
Yeah.
And, sure. Like, you'd have to hope that whoever runs it and orders stuff is cool. And they're not just, like, pulling the only popular stuff.
Yeah.
That reminds me of something I remember hearing my dad talk about one time. He was talking to one of his sisters about how, like, they were listening to stuff like Adam Ant and Joan Jett, and they thought it was, like, the most obscure stuff. Like, no one had ever heard of it.
Right.
You know, but it's like those are huge bands, you know. Joan Jett is like a household name, you know.
Yeah. I guess maybe like college radio too, like maybe they would play stuff.
Yeah, I bet that played a huge factor in people discovering new things.
Yeah.
But even then you still needed to be close enough to a good college that would, you know, have a radio station like that. Like, I'm in North Carolina and I don't think in 83 there was a college radio station playing anything remotely cool like that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the South, I always feel like, got left behind when it came to punk rock, primarily because nobody ever came down here to tour. I mean, a handful of bands did, but at one point I was looking at, like, bands below the Mason-Dixon line and from, like, the early 80s, and they're all bands I'd never heard of. Like, even Florida didn't have any giant acts that came out of there or even became well-known within, like, the punk legacy. I guess with North Carolina, we had Corrosion of Conformity, but they almost became more known as a thrash band.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had the era of, like, when Hot Water Music and those bands came out, and there was, like, a sudden...
Yeah, I think the surge down here happened in the 90s.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a lot of hardcore, like... 90s hardcore in the 90s in Florida. So, yeah, like your Shai Hulud and all that kind of stuff down there.
Definitely.
Yeah, I guess later 90s is when, like, the poppier stuff showed up. And then, I guess North Carolina, we have the Chapel Hill thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
Indie rock explosion. So, I guess that's our true legacy, but
Yeah. Yeah. But there's no like real early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, and I mean, the South being mostly rural, that kind of makes sense too.
Yeah. I mean, we know Black Flag and Minor Threat and Bad Brains had played in Charlotte because the one club they play at is still an operational club here.
That's done yet.
Yeah. So like that's our like our line to history, but yeah. I always try and think about like who the local bands were back then, but you have no idea. Probably never recorded anything short or like a cassette demo or something.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Well, I guess we could get into the album. So for this episode, we got number 49 on the album charts, and it is 45 Grave, Sleep in Safety. Run through some basics about the band real quick. 45 Grave are a horror punk death rock band from Los Angeles, California, formed in 1979. This is their debut full length. It was released on Enigma Records, who also released TSOL's Revenge and Wipers Follow Blind, which we've previously covered. The personnel on this record is Dinah Cancer on vocals, Paul B. Cutler on guitars, keys, and vocals, Rob Graves, get it, on bass and vocals, Paul Roessler on keys and vocals, and Don Bowles on drums and vocals. So everybody kind of pitched in vocally. Don Bowles was also in The Germs, and Rob Graves was in The Gun Club and The Bags, and the record was produced by Paul Cutler and Craig Leon produced albums by The Ramones, Blondie, and The Bangles. So he's a pretty big deal. All right, so I guess first off, we'll let you two go first. What'd y'all think of the record?
Well, I gotta say, both of the records that we listened to in this one, it's not anything that I would normally listen to, which is kind of really fun because I just got to sit and listen to something that is completely out of my wheelhouse. I like the opener where it's like a funny, weird talking like. They start out weird right off the bat, and then there's a giant church organ. Like, okay, I can get behind this. But yeah, it's a weird record. A lot of strange. It's, I don't know. A good takeaway is that you can throw away any rules of songwriting and just do what you want. And yeah. That's how you should do it. Because it's you can write a really weird record, and people might like it.
Yeah, it's funny because the way we do this show is like whenever we get someone to agree to come on the show, we'll send them the list of like available episodes we have coming up. And I was surprised y'all picked this one. Was there anything about it in particular that made you choose this one, or was it just completely random?
It was like lack of familiarity where I was like, okay, let's see what this is about. And then also I like that 45 Grave had a female vocalist. So I was like, okay, hell yeah, let's hear some female vocals.
Yeah.
That was also a pretty big reason why I chose this one.
And I think she's a great singer. Like,
yeah. Yeah, honestly, it's like Waitresses meets Monster Mash. The best description I could give it. I did like that.
Dylan, what'd you think of this record?
So I had sort of an idea of what 45 Graves sounded like going in, but then I was repeatedly surprised throughout it. I think by like track three, Party Time, I texted Justin and was like, what is happening on this record? This is...
I think that Party Time song has like, I think that's the one with really weird messed up lyrics. And I'm like, what is this about?
Yeah, I didn't look too hard at the lyrics on this record, primarily because I was like, well, it's horror punk. I mean, is it really matter what horror punk bands are singing about? You know, this is the age of the misfits, so, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're not the most woke in 2019 terms.
They're pretty rough lyrics.
But I kind of took that as just to be like the camp of horror-themed bands. So I had listened to this album when I was in college, and it didn't really stick with me. It wasn't something I ever really came back to. So I was familiar with their sound and what kind of music they were. And when I listened to it again, I found myself enjoying the cheesiness or the campiness of it. Yeah. And I kind of loved how a lot of 80s, early 80s, like horror-themed things were so inspired by like 50s and 60s horror movies and TV.
Yeah.
So there's like this nice like layer of, you know, cheese all over everything. Like, there's a song on here. The version on Spotify is the extended version with a couple bonus tracks. And on it, there's a cover of the song.
Oh, is that?
Well, there's that, School's Out, Alice Cooper, but that Riboflavin song is also a cover.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
It is, I'm trying to find the full name of that song. It has an incredibly long name. 45 Grave. It's, the full song is called Riboflavin Flavored Non-Carbonated Polyunsaturated Blood.
Right.
And it's a cover of a 60s song by Don Henson. It's Don Henson and the Rigor Mortis.
What?
Rigor Morticians, excuse me. From the 1964 album Monster Dance Party, which includes the song The Monster Mash.
Of course, there it is.
Oh, wow.
Trouble fighting next to fight. That's why I come back to my
rises in the western sky, and the vampires are out on the sly. At times they have trouble finding necks to bite. That's why I concocted my new delight, my riboflavin flavored, non-carbonated, polyunsaturated blood.
I don't think they are the original Monster Mash band, but they definitely covered it. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like that. I mean, that's, the cover sounds just like that. There's, what else is on here? There's even like a surf song on here. The song Surf Bat. It's like an instrumental surf song. And
yeah, it made me think of like being in sixth grade in the gym for the Halloween party. That's basically like, this is the soundtrack. This is it.
Yeah, lots of fake cobwebs. And
yeah, exactly.
they, one of their song Party Time was featured on the soundtrack Return of the Living Dead.
Oh. And
that totally makes sense for what they are.
Oh, yeah. I gotta say props to them for how much they use organs. That's cool. They throw a xylophone in on the record once or twice. That's, you know, props for using everything available in the studio.
It's an interesting record. I think there are two like really fun, really great songs on here. I really think Party Time and the song Evil are probably the most entertaining tracks on the album.
Yeah.
Which they made a video for Party Time as well.
Well, I'm sure that's a pretty, I might have to watch that just to see the visuals that match up with the song.
Is it from the movie? Does it have movie footage in it?
No, like there's like a fan edit that's got the movie playing while like the song is going over it, but the video itself is like, it's home video footage of a cookout in the 50s, and then it cuts to the present, I guess. Whatever present that they were living in, and like she's wearing a wedding dress, and there's lots of crazy makeup and face paint, and it's an interesting video. It's kind of what you would expect from an 83 horror themed video, but at the same time, it's the concept of the video is a little strange.
Okay. What else on this record? Oh, I told Jeff, yeah, in the middle of the record, that Slice of Life song, that's like a very long song. I don't know, it was like 6 minutes or something. And it was,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it has like right in the middle of the song, this strange part where everything cuts out and then it's just like TV noises and stuff. And then there's like a Metallica ballad vibe right after, like the guitars. And then organ again comes back, and then it's like industrial goth for a while. It really takes you on a ride, that one.
Is that's the only song where the guy sings the whole song for the most part, right?
Yeah.
It feels like they were literally trying everything. Like they were just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Oh yeah.
And some of it works and then some of it really doesn't.
Yeah. Definitely.
Huh.
there's a lot of similarities. So I mentioned the Misfits, Earth AD came out this time, and which that's more hardcore than it is horror punk, I guess. But then there are also a lot of similarities to TSOL's album Revenge that came out around this time too, which they're label mates, and also on the Revenge of the Living Dead soundtrack. So there's a lot of similarities. It's got this, it's not quite goth, because I guess goth at this time had more of a Cure thing going, like more sparse guitar playing.
Yeah.
And 45 Grave, I guess, they're doing bigger, like crunchier guitars, but
they were very crunchy.
Yeah.
A lot of high end in those guitars too. Yeah. Like if you can do tinny and crunchy at the same time, they did it.
I would say as far as 83 production goes, it sounds pretty good. Like there's definitely some money behind it.
Vinyl sounds really decent.
Like, yeah.
True.
Yeah, the more DIY stuff in 83 would have sounded way, way rougher. But
way less organ.
Yeah.
I kept reading a lot of reviews that kept comparing them to Christian Death around this time, and I kind of get it, but
I have no idea.
I'm not super familiar with Christian Death's discography, but I listened to the records that came out around this period, and a lot of people were like, well, they did the death rock thing before 45 Grave, so they did it better. It's basically their idea is who did it first is the better one, not it. But I definitely prefer this to the Christian Death much more, primarily because Dinah's a way better singer than the guy in Christian Death. The band has a weird history because they broke up in 85, reunited in 88, broke up again in the 90s, and then the lead singer formed a whole new band in the late 90s and released an album. So it's like
this. Under the same name, or?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, weird.
Oh.
And I listened to a little bit of that, and it's nowhere near as good as this one. But
oh boy.
Yeah. But this is essentially their one album with this, at least with this as a unit, with these musicians together. Because they have like a couple other EPs and like singles, but they all pretty much have the same songs. So it's strange. They just kind of had like this one and they were done for the most part.
Yeah, and you said some of the members or someone was from the Germs as well, right?
Yeah, Don Bowles.
And then I read, I read Pat Smear was playing for a little bit in this band.
Yeah.
So I wonder where kind of in the evolution of them, like when he played, or if literally he played like one show, I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where he fell on the, if he recorded anything with them or if he was just like live, because it's LA and...
Yeah.
LA punk.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird record.
It is. Dylan, do you have any more thoughts on this record? Or
I would say if you are interested in maybe a more cohesive, I think probably better sounding band that's doing something in this lane of like spooky rockabilly, psychobilly kind of death rock. The first couple records by the Gun Club, which was Rob Graves, better known as, or I guess otherwise known as Rob Ritter, his other band. Those are Fire of Love and Miami. Those are both great records.
Was that before 45 Grave?
Those two were, yes.
Yeah.
The first two. And then the Gun Club kept going, but.
Man, I wonder why is this band called 45 Grave? That's such a weird name.
So I actually saw that in the Wikipedia. Let's see. Okay, according to Don Bowles, Paul Cutler found a mysterious button at a thrift store that said, "We dig 45 Grave," and then they said, "We should name our band that," and everyone agreed. I have no idea what that means, but...
Yeah, that's... Who knows? Yeah, maybe there was another band, and they're like, "Hey, they took our name."
It's a strong anti-Trump stance.
Oh, I just got that.
It's a thinker, sorry.
Yeah, I have no idea what that really means, but whatever. It's what they said.
Yeah, okay.
It'd be weird if it was something like a funeral home or something, where they, like a cemetery. Oh, like, God. Oh, this is our flair. I don't know.
or the thanks for visiting button you get when you go to the funeral home.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was like gun related, because isn't like a 45 a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I thought at first too, but if it's from a pin that says "We dig 45 grave," I don't know.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah.
How mysterious.
Well, unless anyone has anything else they want to say about this record, we can go ahead and give it a score.
Okay.
So we'll go first so y'all get an idea of what we're doing. We rank each album between 0 and 5 stars, but you can also do like the quarter points between, so like a 4.5 or a 2.25, so along those lines. So I'll go first. I enjoyed this record for the most part. I give it a 3.5, primarily because it was just so different. Like, they tried a little bit of everything, and it, like I said earlier, it didn't work all the time, but the effort is what makes it stand out to me. So, I don't know. I enjoyed the record. Dylan, what do you think?
I think I probably would rate it more like a 3, just a 3.0. I do feel like they are really scattered. They tried so many things that a lot of not great stuff got through. and I feel like as far as like fun, campy, psychobilly, like I'd probably rather listen to the Cramps. And as far as like more like a little bit genuinely scary, I'll go for the Gun Club or, you know. So I don't feel like they excel at anything. I guess I would say that they do excel at doing what TSOL tried to do, which was like a gothy sort of anthemic rock and roll. I thought they did a really good job there, and Dinah sounds great.
Yeah, she's my favorite part of the record. She's what makes it stand out to me. She would be the reason why I would come back to this record. Okay, not so much the rest of the band, but
okay. So we're in, I think, agreement.
Yeah.
I think we're giving this a 2.5. 0.5. The reason it went up is literally because of Dinah. Her vocals give it that 0.5 extra. Otherwise, it would have been a 2. It's just, it's all over the place, which, I mean, it is interesting that they did try a bunch of stuff, and it's, good for them on that part. It's very long. Like 14 songs, almost 50 minutes.
But that might have been the bonus tracks version.
Right? Yeah. Oh.
Well, I got a very long record, but I made it through. Yeah, it's good for a spooky party soundtrack. It will not.
Yeah, I mean, you are right about the length, because there is a song that's 5 minutes long and another song that's 6 minutes long.
Yes,
it's long. So, like, it is long. Oh, and 2 songs over 5 minutes. The final track, Procession, is over 5 minutes. So, yeah, throw in those bonus tracks. It was hard to get through just because it was so long. But
so long. So songs.
Well, all right. We'll move along to our EP. And this one, I put EP in quotes. So we'll explain that in a second. This is number 17 on the EP charts, and it is The Birthday Party with their self-titled EP, The Birthday Party. Alternately called the Friend Catcher 12-inch, but not to be confused with the Friend Catcher 7-inch from 1980.
Oh, yeah.
So this is not a real EP in the sense that they did not record it as an EP. It's a compilation of songs from multiple different records.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, yeah, none of these songs are from, only like one or two of these songs are from even the same recording session, and those wound up on albums. So it's a compilation. This is one of the issues with Rate Your Music, is because it's user-based, and other users have to approve submissions, unless you're already super familiar with it, you're just going to kind of blindly approve whatever submission someone puts in. So there's a lot of misidentified records on Rate Your Music, or things that are like identified as albums or EPs when they're either a compilation or a demo. Like, it shouldn't be really included. But we went ahead with it anyway, just because we'd already drawn it at this point. So The Birthday Party were an Australian post-punk band that formed in 1978. This was released on the legendary 4AD Records, who have released an incredible amount of albums. But I'll just let you know what they put out in 83, just to give you an idea. So they put out Cocteau Twins' Head Over Heels. They put out a couple Bauhaus compilations and some Modern English singles, because they released the Modern English records in 82 and 84. So wow. they put out the big, what's the big Modern English song? Melt With You.
Yeah. So,
and a bunch of This Mortal Coil singles. Yeah. So 4AD was pretty big. And then later they would do stuff like the Pixies and all sorts of just huge stuff. The personnel on this record is Nick Cave on vocals, Tracy Pugh on bass, Phil Calvert on drums, Roland S. Howard on guitar, and Mick Harvey on guitar and organs. As I said, like, all these songs are from different albums, so like they all have different producers who made them, so I won't name all of them. Regular listeners of the show will know that we've seen Roland S. Howard's name on these charts a bunch of times, and we had no idea who he was. So this answers why he's on these charts all the time, because he was in The Birthday Party. And then Mick Harvey was also in The Bad Seeds with Nick Cave, who really needs no introduction. Everyone knows who Nick Cave is. All right, Dylan, what did you think of these songs?
Oh. Well, I don't think I like The Birthday Party. I actually wound up listening to two separate 80s Nick Cave Bad Seeds records this week. And they were hit or miss. There were some really great songs. And then there are like some songs that sound like a cartoon skeleton playing a ribcage xylophone. Like, or like an evil carnival. So he tended towards some goofier ideas that don't work for me. The Birthday Party are a little more restrained in terms of like their sound, so I can kind of appreciate that, but it also made it a little harder to get through, because not really any of these songs stood out to me. They're very raw, no wave, disjointed, and I don't know.
Oh yeah, I didn't like it at all. I did not like it. I was
pull your punches. Just let it all out.
Yeah, it was rough to get through. I think I might have quoted, "This is almost unlistenable." I think I might have said that at one point. Yeah, it was not very good. It was just a lot of, I don't know. I guess I don't like Nick Cave at all. Perhaps might be it. It surprises me that label, like the Modern English, and then going on to put out the Pixies. I'm like, how did this get released? Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
Have you listened to much Nick Cave outside of?
Not really, no. But I may not.
I would say he's definitely got a lot of experimentation in his music, but then at the same time, he also comes across like a traditional songwriter. Like, he'll write lots of ballads almost, and he has a Leonard Cohen-y vibe to him at times.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If Leonard Cohen was a Tim Burton character, he's very strange.
Yeah.
But he can write some really great tunes. But then I agree, when he gets in his arty thing, he's a little much for me. I think I liked this EP more than everyone else, but I didn't love it. So I really like the song Release the Bats. I like the song Blast Off. I did not like the Friend Catcher that much, or Mr. Clarinet.
Release the Bats is the is that the sex vampire?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I was like, is he really, is that what he's saying? Yeah.
He was like kind of growly in that song. Like he's like all over the place vocally. There's a little bit of Adamant in there in like maybe the drumming. It's definitely like a post-punk record. Yeah, yeah, you're right with the no wave being an element. I don't know. I didn't hate it. I did find myself tuning out towards the end of a couple of these songs because the songs are really long too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the first two were like 2-something, but then the last couple were 5 minutes or something really long.
Yeah, 4 minutes 22, 3 minutes 44, and 4 minutes 1. So when you mash them all together, that's a long...
When we were listening to Mr. Clarinet, Katrina, at maybe 45 seconds, was like, I think I like this song the best so far. And then by minutes 4.5, she was like, this is my least favorite song.
Yeah.
I felt like that happened a lot on this record, too. It would be like, man, this started off really cool. And then, oh, okay, I'm done. I'm ready to be finished.
Yeah. I just don't connect to it.
There's not really any parts more than just, like, there's a part.
Yeah, we were trying to talk, how did this come together? They showed up with no idea of what they're doing. Everyone just picked up their instruments, and they're like, okay, one take, what comes to your mind, got it. Let's do that for 5 minutes. Yeah. Song over. Like, I don't know.
What's interesting is this, we have to think about this too, it's a compilation. And yeah, these are the songs they selected.
Yeah.
It's also weird because they don't sound different, like, oh, this would be from a different record or a different time of their career or anything. It just sounds a kind of mishmash of, I don't know. It's
Were they a band for very long?
So they started in 78 and then they broke up in 83. So this was at the end.
Oh, they should be better for 5 years.
Well, this is their whole career. This is their...
Oh, like, right. God.
Well, according to Rate Your Music, it says 1980 is when they formed, but Wikipedia said 78. So I'm guessing they were one of those bands that, like, they kind of got together early on, but they weren't who they really were until a couple years later. So, yeah, these are... All these songs came out in a 3-year span then, essentially.
Whew. Think about what some bands have done, and it just bands that we mentioned earlier, like... The Minutemen or Husker Du, what they did within a 3-year span.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The amazing records and like the amazing change in their sound and abilities, like as musicians. And
yeah, it's pretty interesting because it kind of speaks to the fact that like Nick Cave could end up being Nick Cave after doing this, right? So it's like people had time to become better musicians. And people were still putting out these records. It's, like, way different than now.
But I want to mention, there definitely, when I was listening to this, I'm like, there's such a freaking double standard where, like, I feel like if you're a female vocalist, you have to be really good to get any sort of credit. And I'm like, but this can happen. And this guy is, like, limping through this stuff, like, growling and doing I don't even know what, and it's like, yeah, he gets to be released on a label, and this is great. Here's a compliment.
That reminds me a conversation that I've had with my wife recently where I was talking about, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Lucinda Williams,
country
singer, and how her later records, she adopted this like kind of like drunken, slurring, like off-key drawl. And I love it. Like, it sounds so cool. Like, she sounds like a character in one of her songs, and it's perfect.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about how I would see people talk about her records and being like, yeah, I wish she'd sing better. I wish she'd sing more like her earlier stuff. And I don't like this affected vocal. And I'm like, but it's exactly the thing that people like Tom Waits and Nick Cave are like praised for. Like, oh, he's such a, you know, character of a voice.
Like, yeah, if you're a female, if you have you can have either two types of voices. You either have to have like the perfect, beautiful voice, which is never wrong somehow, or you have to have a unique voice that's like gruff or something, but still perfect. It can't be too unique, or else everyone hates you and people are willing to comment on it at all times. But yeah, still, the men don't have that. They can really be free to sound as good or bad as they want, and it's acceptable. So that's garbage.
Yeah, I mean, it's because of the patriarchy. I mean, that is 100% it. Yeah. Men are allowed to be experimental and do whatever they want, but women, oh, they've got to fit in this perfect little box.
Exactly.
Who would you consider, as far as women vocalists, who would you consider that would have like more of a unique and different voice? Like, I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head.
Off the top of my head, let me think. God, well, now that I'm like,
I mean, you've got your, while you think about it, you've got your classic, you know, like R&B singers, like opera singers, like super like trained singers.
Yeah.
Which it is great. They have an amazing ability. But to me personally, I don't really want to listen to the most trained singer in the world. And then.
Yeah. Like even like the singer from Charlie Bliss, like her voice is so high. So it's like a little alarming at first, but you know, she is still a great singer, and there's
it's a voice that grows on you, which is cool.
And I mean, I don't know, there's so many different vocalists, but I'm like, of course, drawing a blank on all of
those. I know I'm having a hard time like thinking of somebody like a Nick Cave, but
well, that's the thing, is I can't think of any successful female artist who consistently sings flat.
Oh no, yeah, you as the female, you wouldn't be able to be like Nick Cave. You wouldn't be able to sing like that, and you're not getting on a big label sounding like that. Mm-hmm. Like,
you think about like Yoko Ono, you know, she has a notoriously quote unquote bad voice in the same like kind of situation as like a Nick Cave, you know, but you don't talk about Nick Cave's voice being bad. But Yoko.
People talk about it. And that's the thing, is people don't talk about Yoko Ono unless they're talking about John Lennon too.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a way better artist.
The only people I can think of is maybe someone like Bjork,
who
does a lot of different things with her voice.
Yes, she's very experimental.
And then maybe PJ Harvey.
Yeah.
Who was connected to Nick Cave for a period. So that I'm almost wondering too if that was, I don't know when she came to prominence compared to her relationship with him. I want to say she was a thing before him though, as far as her career. But they were very closely tied for a long time there. Her first record came out in 92. So I don't know. It's almost like, well, we'll let her do it because she's associated with our Lord and Savior, Nick Cave, over here. But Bjork is more, I guess, yeah, she's probably the best example of someone who was allowed to be weird. And then, you know, she's Icelandic, too. So I guess there's a little novelty there for the casual listener. Then, I guess she's
weird, but very listenable. It's still like, I can't think of anyone like hearing this birthday party thing. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
And like, I can't think of any
I can't think of anyone who was allowed to, who just like screeched like that and
exactly
was given like praise for it.
Like people talk about how bad, like how Courtney Love can't sing and all of that. I'm like, she was great, but like, and so much more ahead of like, you know, the birthday party vocals. But yeah, it's just crazy. Just better you have to be as a female to be passable, and male, you just do whatever you want. Reach for 15 whole minutes.
It's just a strange release. Like it, I always get irritated whenever we get something like this that's not a true record. It's not a, I don't know. It kind of breaks our rules as far as like the type of things we like to talk about on here. But I don't know if we would ever really talk about Nick Cave otherwise. But yeah, I guess unless anyone has anything else they want to say about this record, we can give it a score.
All right, let me discuss over here.
I'll give it a 3.0. I do think there's something here worth listening to, maybe not for the entire duration of the songs, but there's some interesting elements to it, particularly in the music. Yeah, a 3.0. And then, well, I take that back. I'm going to get a 2.75. I changed that because it's not a true release. It's a compilation. It's not like a real thing. So, I don't know. Dylan, what do you think?
I definitely enjoyed the 45 Grey record more. So, I would put this below whatever I gave that. So, I got to give it, I don't know. I really want to give it a 2. I mean, it just, it never really hits a stride. Every interesting part is right at the beginning of the songs, and then it just gets ground down so fast. I really don't think this is Nick Cave's best work. I think even within a year or two of this release, he was doing better stuff with the Bad Seeds. Putting more effort, I think, into his writing and into his delivery, and not so much just like playing around.
I wonder how much of that too was the other musicians in the Bad Seeds, because it's only one other member from the Birthday Party who was in that band.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance that they're, because those songs are a little more fully arranged, because there's a ton of instruments in the Bad Seeds.
Yeah.
So I feel like you have to put a lot more effort into it. So it, maybe with all those other musicians, it brought him up more. But yeah. Yeah, I would definitely listen to the Bad Seeds more than I would ever listen to the Birthday Party.
We're giving this a 1.5. It's a birthday party I don't ever want to go to. I think we gave it one for the bad song. Yeah. And a 0.5 for the first half of Mr. Clarinet, which really is more for the illustration that popped up on YouTube for the Mr. Clarinet song, which was like, it was a very whimsical illustration of a skeleton playing a clarinet. And I said, look, I wish the band sounded more like that illustration.
Kinda
like
you'll love the Bad Seeds.
Yeah. There you go.
Awesome. Well, next week we are going to discuss the year 1990, and we got number 129 on the album charts, and it is Slapshot, Sudden Death Overtime, and our EP for that episode is number 10, and it is Rain, Lavash Ki Rit. So, some straight edge hardcore and some Discord emo core. So, tell everybody where we can follow Expert Timing and where we can get your records and all that stuff.
Well, you can get our record off of deathprotector.com if you want to buy the vinyl, and our Bandcamp has all our stuff for free to download, which is experttiming.bandcamp.com, and then we're on Facebook at Expert Timing, we're on Twitter at expert_timing, just, you know, Google us, man.
Yeah, and I'll include all those in the show notes on this episode, so listeners, check down in the show notes and it'll give you links to everything. So
cool.
We sound nothing like these bands.
Not at all.
And that's what I asked Justin, like, what are they going to get out of these records? Just what I know of Expert Timing, I don't see any similarity at all. So I was,
that's what why I chose them. I wanted something kind of very different than anything I listened to. So that really was kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of the, intention of the show, kind of the luck of the draw.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of backfires sometimes because then you'll get you wind up having to listen to like a squawky art punk record with a terrible saxophone player on it. But
ironically called the birthday party. It is a fun party.
But I highly recommend everyone go listen to Expert Timing. The record is great. It was one of my favorites from last year. If you're going to Fest, go see them play because they put on a great show. Thanks a lot, you guys. And, maybe we'll have you on again sometime. This is really fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, if you get any REM albums once you get to the 90s, call us up.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thanks a lot.
Definitely.
Thanks.
Nice to meet y'all. Bye. Have a good one.
In episode 2F09, when Ichi plays Scratchy's skeleton like a xylophone, he strikes the same rib twice in succession, yet he produces two clearly different tones. I mean, what are we, to believe that this is some sort of a magic xylophone or something? Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.